welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am your host, Pat Johnston. And to quote the great Lando Calrissian, by the way, the great and underrated Lando Calrissian from Return of the Jedi, that was too close. Yes, it was. Oh, wow. I just was not prepared for that, I guess. But Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed, the working-class progressive candidate in Michigan's hotly contested Democratic Senate primary, squeaked by in, well, I think we can all say, a nail-biter to beat the corporate establishment Democratic Party's pick of Congresswoman Haley Stevens. Now, Dr. Abdul is beating Haley Stevens, let me check one more time here as we're recording, I think still by a percentage point or maybe less than a percentage point. And let's see, I think there are just a couple of thousand votes still out there to be counted. And Dr. Abdul is leading, let me make sure I get this one right, by about, 15,000 votes. Every vote counts, everyone. And it was an enthusiastic turnout for certain, which actually doesn't really surprise me, but it still makes me feel good. But analysts, statisticians, and Haley Stevens' campaign called the race by Wednesday morning. And I think NBC News was the first one to call the race, and then the others, including the Associated Press, made their projections later on Wednesday morning. And I'm not sure when I'm going to quit or when I will learn to quit reading polls. I told myself after the 2016 election that I'd never, ever get too wrapped up in polls. Once again, reputable polls were off on yet another race, another Michigan race. I usually look at the aggregate of polls, and while there was that Emerson College poll last week showing that Dr. Abdul had around a 15-point lead, that just did not seem real plausible. However, secretly, I'll share with you, I thought Abdul would win by around 5 to 6 points, a 5 to 6 point margin, just by looking at all of the polling. But I had a feeling that something was happening, something different was happening on election night when a batch of absentee ballots in Wayne County came in, and that allowed Haley Stevens to pull into a brief yet small lead. That's when all of a sudden I started getting a bit nervous, and I know many of you were out there. Abdul soon regained the lead as more votes were being counted, but he never could pull away, always leading by 2 points or 3 points, then back down to 2 points, then back up to 2.6 points, then down to 2.3, and then all of a sudden he was down by under a point. And there was just no way I was going to be able to go to bed and sleep with the race teetering on this edge. There was no way. I don't know how some of you do it, but hey, I'm glad that you can do that. I'm just not that way. And I saw our good friend and Livingston County progressive Casey Helton tweet how she was doing some late night nervous cleaning of dishes and of the kitchen. And the funny part, so was I, Casey. So was I around 12:15 a.m. I just needed to get away. And I was hoping, I have to admit, I thought, okay, me leaving and just getting off the grid for just a little bit and cleaning dishes and cleaning the kitchen, maybe then when I come back, he's going to have this thing all wrapped up. No, that did not happen at all. By the way, Casey Helton will be on with me next week, so get ready for Casey's energy and, of course, wisdom next week. Now, as the percentage of precincts dwindled down to around 11 to 10%, it would be NBC News that became the first news entity to project Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed as the winner. Then, that's when I finally went to bed, and I said, okay, I'll get some sleep. It's around 2 o'clock. But then I was also experiencing the sudden jolt of energy because Dr. Abdul won. So how could I sleep? I couldn't. I needed to see what everybody was saying. And again, I envy all of the normal people out there who had no problem going to bed late on election night and feeling A-okay to learn the results on Wednesday morning. It's sort of like with sports. I just can't go to bed even no matter how late a game is going and then wake up and see what happened in the morning. No, if I've invested time, I need to see how this thing ends. Same with elections. So more on the Senate race and what we learned coming up here in just a moment. I would just like to remind you that Left of Lansing, Michigan's premier progressive podcast, is available wherever you get your podcast. And make sure, everyone, to please give it a good 5-star review wherever you are listening. Make sure to also subscribe to the show on YouTube and let me... Yes, let me apologize for having a massive YouTube, I don't know, meltdown, self-immolation during my first attempt at a YouTube live audition on election night. I thought I would just get on for about an hour and talk about some of the returns and see how some of you were feeling out there. And you know what? I have to tell you, when it started, man, I was on fire. I was showing everybody the attic. I was just sharing some things, what I had for dinner that night, kind of like a good luck dinner that I usually have on election nights. And I was just on a roll. And then I read comments saying that no one could hear me. Ah! So I started panicking. I was like, what do you mean you can't hear me? I'm looking. It doesn't say it's muted. I have no idea. So I'm clicking all around. And I had to end the stream. I had to end the stream because I couldn't figure out why no one could hear me. Our technical advisor and my wife, Dr. Heather, eventually figured out the problem and fixed it. It was a Google issue, of course. But then I had to start a new stream that was on a different link than the one that I shared everywhere. And so no one was really on there to watch me. So I just decided to abort the mission. Let this be a lesson. Let that be a lesson to everyone. Never, ever assume. And always do a test run first. I don't know. You know, you think a former award-winning broadcaster would know such a rule. In fact, it's that I always said, never assume. That was one of the rules I always held in broadcasting. That being said, the problem is fixed. So now I will try doing a YouTube live video here in the future. So subscribe to YouTube, Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. And subscribe to Left of Lansing's Patreon page. That's patreon.com/leftoflansing. You'll also start to see some video commentary on my Patreon site that you can only get on Patreon. It won't be shared anywhere on a podcast, but you will have to subscribe to see it. But don't worry. You can subscribe for free because I believe in spreading freedom, democracy, and working class progressivism free of charge. So you don't have to worry about that. However, you know, if you'd like to leave a $5 donation, I won't be mad at you. Won't be mad at you one bit. In fact, I have to give a Left of Lansing shout out to our good friend, Tim. You know, I feel like the manager in that 80s baseball movie, Major League. You know, the manager yells to his third base manager, Tim. Anyway, Tim, thank you. I know, my mind's going everywhere. Tim, thank you so much for your $5 donation for every month here. I greatly appreciate it. And even more, Tim, even more, Jessica Shepherd, our dear friend, fantastic show voice, of course. She thanks you because your donation will help me take Jess out to lunch here real soon. So she appreciates it, Tim, and I greatly appreciate it. And anyone else who wants to donate, just remember that I'll give you a shout out as well. Hey, come on. That's the gift that just keeps on giving, right? Okay, before I forget, I have to say this. No matter what, if it's a player that I normally don't like or cheer for, or if it's a coach or a politician that I normally don't like or cheer for, I still get this sudden infusion of, humanity when they actually lose. I'm sorry, I'm not part of that whole MAGA F your feelings crowd. I'm not that way. But when Congressman Haley Stevens conceded in the race and announced that she called Dr. Abdul to congratulate him on winning, this was my first thought after reading it, because it was like real then. My first thought was, wow, I mean, that had to be devastating, just devastating for her to do. It's one thing to lose by double digits, because I think you can accept it and then go back to the drawing board and figure out what you want to do next. But to lose in such a razor-thin margin of a race, I thought, you know, how hard it must be for Haley Stevens that morning to have to do that. You're so close But there's just no way that you're going to end up winning. And I remember even feeling that way when John McCain lost to Barack Obama and I watched his concession speech, or when Clinton beat George H. Bush. I felt the same. I never felt sorry for dear leader Trump, though, when he lost to Biden. Just want to make that clear for everyone. I guess for me, if I can bring a sports analogy into it, I'm a huge tennis fan, and I love Rafa Nadal because he was the only one for a while there who could really challenge the great Roger Federer in the 2000s. There was a 4-year period where Roger Federer just could not be touched. And while Rafa, though, did beat Roger at the French Open and some other tournaments, he could never best Roger at Wimbledon. But when he finally did it in 2008, I was first elated for my guy, Nadal, on finally conquering the Wimbledon mountain. But then I quickly just got this feeling, and it was like I felt a little sorry for Roger Federer, watching him shake hands with the elated Rafa Nadal, as Roger had to deal with his first loss at Wimbledon and had to deal with it in front of the world. So that's how I was feeling. It's like, man, to be close to winning 6 in a row, if you came that close, I started feeling sorry for him. I mean, we're all human beings, and hey, that's where my mind and my heart will always first go. So for just a moment there, I was sympathizing with how devastating this must be for Haley Stevens. I was glad to see that Haley Stevens made the concession call to Dr. Abdul early on Wednesday morning, and Democratic establishment leaders followed suit quickly. They jumped aboard, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who we all know wanted Haley Stevens winning at all costs. I have to tell you, though, there's still something in the back of my brain saying, I don't know if this Democratic leadership is going to be all in for Dr. Abdul. I think the people will be, but I'm not sure about the Democratic Party leadership, especially in D.C. But make no mistake about it, this is an earth-shattering victory for working class progressives, for the working class progressive movement, and a devastating loss for the corporate establishment Democratic Party. Actually, in addition to Dr. Abdul's win, progressives and Democratic socialists earn major victories in other races across the state. Our good friend and strong working class progressive, William Lawrence, not only won, but William Lawrence routed his more so-called moderate opposition to win Michigan's 7th Congressional District primary. Will, congratulations, well done. William Lawrence will now move on to face the MAGA Republican Congressman Tom Barrett in the fall, as Lawrence here is going to try to win what was once Senator Alyssa Slotkin's seat. And speaking of whom, what an embarrassment. Just an absolute abject embarrassment for the so-called moderate Democratic U.S. Senator, a senator that Democratic leaders are pushing out there to say, hey, she's really the face of the party. Alyssa Slotkin decided to back William Lawrence's establishment opponent, Matt Mosdum, who ended up not finishing in second. He finished in third place. And like how voters feel about Gretchen Whitmer right now, there aren't many Democratic and independent voters who are real thrilled with Senator Alyssa Slotkin right now. The other establishment candidate in the race, former Ukraine Ambassador Bridget Brink, finished in a distant second place by some 15 points. As Kyle Davison from Michigan Advance reported, Governors Jennifer Granholm, Jim Blanchard, and some major labor unions, such as the Michigan Education Association, all endorsed Bridget Brink. Yet, William Lawrence, everyone, William Lawrence, co-founder of the Sunrise Movement, who advocated for the working class in this district for years, who advocated for the unhoused, and who also fought against big tech bro data centers in his district, showing up to meetings. He didn't just prevail in that race. He won by substantial margins, proving once again that data centers aren't some niche campaign issue, considering towns and cities across the state are resisting them, considering that Republicans and Democrats are resisting them. Our good friend from the American Prospect, David Dayan, wrote the following on William Lawrence. So listen, he says that Lawrence's main ad in the race featured a data center fight in his district. The issue has become so central to his campaign that when people were asked in a focus group what they think about when they think of Will Lawrence, data centers came out on top. He has effectively defined himself as the anti-data center candidate, which as a synecdoche for taking government back from oligarchical forces is a pretty good position to take. That was David Day. And yes, I am pretty sure, by the way, this is the first time I've ever used the word synecdoche here on the show before, but it means where it's used as part of something to represent the whole. And, you know, that kind of reminds me, if you don't mind me, if I, you know, just dork out here for a second. It reminds me of my media criticism education that I received at Central Michigan University back in the day when we learned about signifiers and the signified. The signifier is like a sound or an image that we maybe point to or refer to, but the signified is what it means to us. So let's say I say ice cream. That's the signifier. You'll know I'm talking about ice cream, of course, but then you'll put your, I guess, own interpretation on it, like imagining an ice cream cone, for instance, or a banana split. You know, that's the signified. It's what you think about. When William Lawrence says data centers, the signifier, voters are taking it to mean much more than just buildings. They hear data centers, and then they equate it with corporate dominance, political corruption, corporate political corruption, loss of autonomy, a billionaire class, the Epstein class, greed. That's the signified. Well, that's what William Lawrence has done, using the political establishment's embrace of data centers as a clear illustration of a working class that just feels unheard, a working class that's feeling unseen and has felt that way for a long time. Some Democratic Party people and their high-priced consultants out there believe, you know, the best way to defeat MAGA Congressman Tom Barrett is to run a milquetoast, safe, middle way kind of a race and argue, you know what, that Democrats, they aren't as bad as Tom Barrett. They're not as bad as MAGA Republicans. They're not as bad as white Christian nationalists. They're not as bad as corporate authoritarians. Well, we'll see if this middle way was indeed the way to go here in a few months. But here's how I look at it. William Lawrence has fired up a lot of voters out there, and he has a fired up base of supporters, even more, who are going around knocking on doors or on the ground, connecting with working class voters. But more than just organization, William Lawrence has a message, a working class message, and he has working class policies that illustrates how he'll not just oppose Tom Barrett, but also showing how his voice in DC will help improve their lives. He's letting them know that he will be a voice in D.C. to fight for them, because a lot of working class Michiganders and Americans don't feel like they've got a voice in the power corridors of Washington, D.C. Just by showing up at data center meetings in Lansing and speaking out against them, William Lawrence is already putting Tom Barrett in a very uncomfortable position. Because you see, his dear leader Trump is helping all these big tech bros build these AI data centers in Michigan. Tom Barrett's afraid to say that he's against data centers. So this is a mix of organization, presence, policies, and yes, strength, something the Democratic Party has lacked for so many years. And that's how William Lawrence trounced his establishment opponents. So congratulations, William Lawrence. And Will and his people out there, if you're listening, you're going to come back here on the show. We had you on here twice during your primary campaign, so we've got to talk to you one more time during your general election campaigns. That way we can give you another Michigan Premier Progressive Podcast push. So congratulations again, William Lawrence. In another race that featured another progressive, actually taking down an incumbent, this was a biggie, Democratic State Representative and Democratic Socialist Donovan McKinney upset and ousted pro-APAC and cryptocurrency creep Detroit Congressman Sri Tandahar by 4 points. Again, I'm going to give a round of applause to Donovan McKinney because he will represent Michigan's 13th House District, and now Detroit will have black congressional representation again. But it was more than that. McKinney split with Tandahar on Israel and AIPAC, which backed Tandahar big time. And again, Israel and AIPAC, like data centers, represents corruption and a working class feeling unheard and unseen. As the Detroit Free Press wrote, McKinney said of his victory, "We showed why being always with the people is more than just a slogan. It's a roadmap for the Democratic Party on how to move forward to defeat the fascism and divisiveness harming our country and to deliver leadership the mighty 13th deserves. A roadmap for the Democratic Party." I love how Donovan McKinney put that. And you know what? I almost forgot. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries backed Sri Tandahar, kind of like, you know, how Chuck Schumer backed Haley Stevens. Working class Michiganders are simply in a populist mood. I keep saying it. Some of you don't want to hear it, but it's true. Interestingly enough, the Democratic Socialist McKinney won in a district where the establishment Haley Stevens won big. And so I've been wondering about that, and I'll talk about that more in this week's Last Call. So Abdul Al-Sayed, Senate primary victory, Donovan McKinney's upset win over incumbent Sri Dandahar, and William Lawrence's convincing victory in Alyssa Slotkin's old district were three major victories for the working class and a major victory for the progressive movement. As the Detroit Metro Times' Steve Kneeling wrote here on Wednesday, the establishment had more money, more powerful endorsements, and more institutional support. Michigan voters chose a different direction. Is this the beginning of a new Democratic Party in Michigan? Is this a new roadmap? You know, as I just told you, Donovan McKinney said. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for me personally, considering how Lily Chang Schulting earned a stunning victory for Michigan's 80th House seat in Kent County. In fact, Kent County is becoming like a bit of a rival to Washtenaw County when it comes to working class progressivism. And Ben Ambrose looks like that he'll prevail in my House district, Michigan's 2nd district. You know, Ben was just on the show here a couple of weeks ago. And if he does prevail, he'll take on the corporate pylon Congressman John Molinar. Now, that's all great news there, but it wasn't all great news for working class progressives. For instance, our good friend and Democratic Socialist candidate Kyle Blomquist suffered a defeat against establishment pick Callie Barr in Michigan's 1st congressional district in the UP. So she'll get to face incumbent MAGA Republican Louisiana Jack Bergman here for a second time. Now, I'm not saying Kyle Blomquist was going to win the general election had he prevailed, but here's how I see it. Kyle Blomquist was speaking to working class youpers, and he was discussing actual working class solutions to boost his fellow northern Michiganders. And I don't know, I guess I just think it's a message that presents stark differences and presents ways for Democrats to connect with the working class. So I hope Kyle doesn't go far away from the political sphere or political world, political picture, whatever. He's engaging, he's got great policy solutions, and he communicates with people. We need people like Kyle Blomquist to fight for progressive causes. And we need people like State Senate nominee Kelly Van Genhoven or KVG in the UP bringing an aggressive working class agenda to the people. We need those kinds of fighters to really start a movement in the Upper Peninsula, a place where the Democrats kind of abandoned over the last 25 years. Now, good friend Aisha Faruqi fell short in her bid to become the Democratic nominee in the 11th district. That's Haley Stevens' old seat. Well, Stevens will give it up on December 31st. Now, Aisha did not accept AIPAC money. She advocated for ICE to be abolished, advocated for immigration rights, and is a fighter for Medicare for all. But she lost to State Senator Jeremy Moss, who was the first openly LGBTQ+ member in the state Senate. And, you know, that's good. That's good. No doubt about it. I mean, we need more diversity like that, more diverse representation like that in Congress. I'm not arguing that point. However, Moss is going to just follow in the footsteps of Haley Stevens by accepting lots of AIPAC cash. And he'll be a vote for sending more and more and more money to Israel and for nullifying even more, for nullifying the freedom of speech for those of us critical of the Israeli government. He's already tried to do that on the state level. So that was a tough loss for us there. Diop Harris II lost in his bid to defeat establishment pick State Senator James McCann in Michigan's 4th congressional district, a seat held by MAGA Republican Bill Huizenga. Now, this was going to be an uphill climb, no doubt, for Harris, but as a former aide to former and maybe soon to be again Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, I'm sure Diop Harris II will get right back up and find ways to help his working class West Michiganders. Progressive state candidate and good friend Ivan Diaz lost in his bid to be the nominee for Michigan's 29th State Senate District in West Michigan. Ivan brought a forceful working class viewpoint and message to the campaign, as he really didn't believe the party's establishment pick, State Representative Phil Skaggs, was best suited to represent that area in West Michigan. And guess what? While Ivan Diaz lost, his other opponent, East Grand Rapids City Commissioner Abby Groff Blazak, did win and thereby defeated the establishment Phil Skaggs. So I guess that's kind of a win there. So what I'm saying is that movements are always going to have setbacks. They're just going to have setbacks. Can't win them all. After all, they're not going after just corporate MAG Republicans. They're trying to unseat corporate establishment Democrats. To break through the barrier, you're going to get stopped and you're going to face adversity. It's not going to be easy. But eventually, the wall does break and allows people like Abdul Al-Sayed, Donovan McKinney, and William Lawrence to win and push the working class movement forward. All right. Oh, wait, one more note. I saw this from MERS News, so listen to this. It says, if Democratic primary turnout numbers equaled general election votes, the Dems would take the state Senate 24-14 and the state House 74-36. Matt Hall, Ann Bolin, Matt Maddock, and Bill Schuette would all lose. Oh, MERS News, don't get my hopes up. Do not get my hopes up. Man, what a phenomenal election night that would be if Matt Hall, Ann Bolin, Matt Maddock, and Bill Schuette all lose their state House and Senate races. That would be fantastic. Coming up, I'll have more to say about the U.S. Senate primary where Dr. Abdul prevailed. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Have you ever heard Pat's lectures on why desserts with fruit aren't really desserts? Or why the 70s produced the greatest movies of all time? I have. So be happy you're just hearing him rant about politics. If you'd like to contact Pat about politics or debate how cocoa is technically a fruit, send a message to leftoflansing@gmail.com. Here's Pat Johnston.
Just want to say a special thanks to my good friend and show voice, Jessica, and congrats, Jess, on Dr. Abdul's victory. Hey, you were out there knocking on doors, and you, along with thousands of other Dr. Abdul volunteers, helped get Dr. Abdul across the finish line. And that was thanks in a major way to you and so many others out there, Jess. Leftoflansing@gmail.com is always the best way to reach me. So, with over 98% of the vote counted in Michigan, working-class progressive Dr. Abdul El-Sayed prevailed against the corporate establishment Democratic Party pick Haley Stevens. El-Sayed has has about a 1 percentage point lead over Stevens, who I said called Dr. Abdul and conceded the race early on Wednesday morning. Now, shortly after NBC News called that race for El-Sayed around 2 a.m., I know it was 2 a.m. because I was still up, his former opponent and state senator, Mallory McMorrow, announced her support for his campaign, saying, "Take it from me, this was a brutal campaign." But whatever differences there were between the candidates in this race, those differences are nothing compared to the contrast in November. Donald Trump and Mike Rogers are banking on all of us being too bruised, too proud, and too hurt to come back together to beat them. Let's prove them wrong. It's a good statement there by Mallory McMorrow, and it was a good move on her part because someone had to try to immediately bridge this gap that is going to be left from this race. It's going to take, I think, just a little while for some old bruises to heal, no doubt about it. So good on Senator McMorrow. Now, I saw a New York Times article today ask if an insurgent candidate with an unabashedly left-wing position could win a moderate state like Michigan. The hand-wringing is already happening. The pearl-clutching is already happening. I don't know about you, but stopping taxpayer money going to Israel is supported by a majority of Americans. So how is that left-wing, New York Times? Or raising taxes on the rich, did that become a left-wing cause? Or not accepting bribe money from DTE, Consumers Energy, Blue Cross Blue Shield, AIPAC, that's left-wing all of a sudden? Former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich nailed it on his Substack on Wednesday, saying that working-class Michiganders chose Abdul El-Sayed because he is a fighter at a time when America needs fighters willing to stand up to the worst tyrant who has ever occupied the White House. Corporate Democrats such as Haley Stevens, along with Rahm Emanuel, Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries, are not up to the task because they won't bite the corporate hand that feeds them campaign money. They won't criticize the billionaire class. They refuse to see how big money has corrupted America. Well done by Robert Reich. That kind of echoed a response that I gave to CNN pundit and longtime Democratic Party ally Karen Finney. Now, Finney took to Twitter to lecture everyone yesterday that national coverage of Michigan has turned this primary into a proxy war over Israel and Gaza while voters are drowning in medical debt, premiums, and everyday costs. Ignoring the full dynamics erases the stakes for voters and obscures what people across Michigan and the country are saying about their anger over costs and daily struggle. To which then I responded, Karen Finney exemplifies why corporate establishment Democrats still are not getting it. Working class Michiganders are fed up with AIPAC, DTE, big tech bros, big pharma, big insurance having oversized influence within the party. They connect the dots with that and also being in medical debt. They're not stupid. They understand what's going on. I just don't understand why this is such a hard fact for people like Karen Finney and the corporate media and political class to digest. They just refuse to accept it. For example, AIPAC spent more than $30 million, $30 million in support of Haley Stevens. And in those ads, they didn't say, "This is backed by AIPAC, and we need Haley Stevens in office to vote for Israel's genocidal right-wing government." No, they never said that. They played ads showing Barack Obama once praising Haley Stevens during her 2018 House bid on how she played a role in the auto bailout efforts. Look, and that's fine. That's fair game. Obama did tout her back then. What wasn't fair game is how it made it look like Obama just backed her, like he endorsed her for this race. And even worse, it was sponsored by AIPAC. I mean, what the hell is AIPAC backing commercials that talk about the auto bailout from 16 years ago? Shouldn't they be talking about Israel? Why are they talking about issues in Michigan? Why are they getting involved in our races? I don't recall Israel having much of a stance when it came to the auto bailout or the financial crisis and what America will do about it. I mean, they probably did, but I don't remember seeing ads about it. And then we also got ads calling Dr. Abdul a misogynist on the weakest evidence imaginable. And Bridge Michigan's fact checkers called those ads completely misleading. And I'll go one more. Those ads lied. Those ads were played on loops on TVs everywhere, not to mention all the mailers, too. You'll remember Jessica Shepherd and I, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about whether or not those ads were effective and if they really help Haley Stevens in the end. Well, sadly, our question has been answered. There's no doubt those ads certainly helped out. They didn't hurt. It seems like how close the race ended up didn't seem like it really hurt. Polls were indicating, several of those polls indicated that El Sayed would earn a convincing win on Tuesday, but it did not happen. Now, those polls were way off again, and I think I'm going to swear off polling, like I said. Probably not. But those ads, I think, yeah, I think they helped Stevens, especially around Southeast Michigan, no doubt about it. However, it wasn't enough. It was not enough, and working class Michiganders fought back and said no to AIPAC, no to DTE, no to big tech, and no to countless other corporate PAC money running our elections. So that is a victory. Now, what got Dr. Abdul across the finish line was that he significantly cut into Haley Stevens' Wayne County advantage. She ended up winning by a 51-46% margin in Wayne County, but I think she and her people were banking on at least an 8 to 10 point margin. And if that would have happened, she would have been the Democratic Senate nominee. Dr. Abdul's campaign, though, had quite the presence in Wayne County. And do not underestimate his time spent in the county as the county's and Detroit's health director. That helped, obviously. As did Dr. Abdul's continued presence around Lansing and Grand Rapids. I mean, he ended up winning by 13% in Ingham County, where Lansing's located, and 25% in Kent County. 25%! Now, I know Democratic Party activist Joe Spaulding and I, we've had our disagreements here over the past few months, but he noted, as a West Michigander, that Dr. Abdul's campaign had a presence in Kent County, whereas Haley Stevens was banking on her fellow congresswoman and pro-Israel stooge Hillary Scolton campaigning for her. Just one person. It wasn't enough. Nowhere close than enough. Scolton, by the way, is not loved out there, and in 2028, she will have a primary challenger for sure. Now, Dr. Abdul also did well along West Michigan's shoreline, around the Cherry Coast, and up in the UP. It was just enough to allow him to inch ahead of Stevens for the win. You know, now, before I forget, if I may, I will criticize Dr. Abdul and his people for one thing, okay? It was the night before the election, and I was seeing these pictures shared on social media of Abdul hanging out with fellow podcasters and influencers, some from the state, some out of state. And I don't know, it looked like it was like a pool party or something. And yeah, I mean, there was nothing unseemly going on or anything like that. But here's how I was thinking that night. And just because of me, because I'm a pessimist, and rightly so sometimes, I thought, you know, instead of hanging out with podcasters, maybe I would have tried getting him up to Saginaw County or Bay County or around the Flint area one last time. You know, maybe. maybe he could have won a few more votes in the last day or two in that area. Look, I don't have any issues with podcasters, obviously, and I don't have issues with podcasters hanging out and corresponding and all that. Cross promotion is part of our gig, and it's how we can best build a solid progressive communication arm. So no problems with that. I guess I just think instead of hanging out with podcasters, I'd rather have Dr. Abdul hanging out with more voters until the very, very end. And no, this is not jealousy. It's not just because Michigan's premier progressive podcast wasn't there. Who wants to hang out by a pool during a nice summer Michigan evening, having drinks and some good food and good company? Certainly not me, not at all. I just like being alone here in the left of Lansing attic. I didn't feel left out whatsoever, not at all. Haley Stevens made the race closer also because she was overperforming in many rural counties, which I have to admit, I didn't see coming. I really didn't. I thought Dr. Abdul was going to do better than Haley Stevens in a lot of rural counties. And I was puzzled somewhat by that development until Zach Gorchow from Gongwer News tweeted an interesting tidbit late on Tuesday night. I'll read it for you. He said, current vote total in the Dem governor primary, 1,378,268. The current total vote in the Republican gubernatorial primary, 882,802. That's a massive gap, almost 500 votes. Wow. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too, Zach. Wow. And I said it like that too. Now, Florida Mike Rogers, the Republican Senate nominee, ran unopposed. MAGA Congressman John James appeared on his way to beating billionaire Perry Johnson, no relation to Don, Howard, or Dwayne, and Jocelyn Benson trounced Chris Swanson on the Democratic side for governor. So all the attention was on this Senate race, and I think that went with for voters. And that's when it hit me. Did some Republicans cross over and vote for Haley Stevens because they saw her as the weaker candidate? I mean, that would explain some of her overperformance in certain areas. I mean, we don't know for sure. I'm just speculating. And we'll know more results, and a breakdown of the results will come in here pretty soon. But it's just something to think about. But make no mistake, though. Make no mistake about whatever you're hearing or being told. Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed's victory, despite being grossly outspent and maligned on a commercial loop, is an amazing accomplishment. As Senator Bernie Sanders said, it might be the most extraordinary political victory in modern American politics that he's ever seen. I mean, it truly was. It truly was. And that cannot be denied. That cannot be debated. Now, I will stress that if I'm Dr. Abdul's people, I'd be planning a number of stops in Saginaw, Bay City, and Flint from now until Election Day. He performed weaker there than expected, and maybe that's because black voters just seemed more comfortable with Haley Stevens. Most black voters, especially older black voters, I predict, will back Abdul Al-Sayed over Mike Rogers in the general election, but I feel like many in the elite circles of the press and political establishment act as if the black vote is some monolith, that it's monolithic, and it's not. It's not at all, which is what I'm going to talk about next in the last call. So stick around. Oh, one last thing, though. Okay, one last thing. In his acceptance speech, yeah, I almost forgot to play this for you. In his acceptance speech in Detroit today, with State Senator Mallory McMorrow by his side, Dr. Abdul took it to Florida Mike Rogers, and he got to illustrate how easy it is to slam dunk on Florida Mike.
Mike's a guy who spent 14 years in Congress with one goal: to figure out how to cash out the day he left. And guess what he did? As soon as he left Congress, after having taken corporate check after corporate check after corporate check to empower the corporations to pick your pockets, he went and he cashed out. Not in Michigan. No, winters are too cold for him. He's got thin skin after all. He went to Florida. So Mike, if you want to be a Florida man, go be a Florida man. If you want to golf in Florida, go golf in Florida. But I promise you, in November, we are going to send you back to Florida. Mike Rogers is the guy who wants to put a data center in your backyard so he can make himself feel a little bit more manly by making an AI video. Mike Rogers is the guy who has never shied away from a DTE check so he could turn his face in the direction of Florida. Mike Rogers is a guy who will do anything Blue Cross Blue Shield wants him to do, including raise your rates. Mike Rogers is a guy who introduced legislation to increase the flow of opioids. He did that while I was in high school. Mike Rogers is a guy whose politics and vision and perspective are old. Mike Rogers is a guy who has never shied away from a corporation he could do a favor for. Mike Rogers is a guy who, believe it or not, went back to Florida so he could lick every single boot Donald Trump owns to beg for his endorsement. I'm so sorry, if you want a senator who's going to lick some boots, fine, go vote for Mike Rogers. But if you want a senator who's going to stand up to Donald Trump, then you've got your option right here.
See, I don't see him struggling to debate Mike Rogers, not one bit. And even more, Dr. Abdul offers a contrast for Mike Rogers' neocon MAGA Republicanism agenda and his love for Dear Leader Trump and his love for the Trump regime and his love for the Epstein class. It was a big night for Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed and progressive candidates, and more importantly, it was a big night for working class Michiganders. You are listening to LOL.
Bringing progressivism with passion each and every week. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd also like to thank Audioboom for publishing the show and helping us spread our populist, progressive, and patriotic message. Speaking of which, let's get back to the show with Pat.
I just saw something from the Associated Press, which is breaking down some numbers on Michigan's Senate primary. It notes that Haley Stevens won some of Michigan's poorest counties. It also notes that Haley Stevens won the richest counties. It also notes that Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed won middle-income counties. Now, it doesn't really surprise me that Abdul won middle-income Michiganders or that Haley Stevens won richer Michiganders. It is a little disheartening to see Haley Stevens beat Dr. Abdul by a 52-44 margin on those making $65,000 or less. But that just goes to show that, hey, let's be honest, progressives have some work to do to make sure everyone not in the top 1% is working class. Someone making $85,000 is working class. Someone making $50,000 is working class. We are all in the same boat as we pay for higher groceries, higher health care, unaffordable rent or homes, and higher gas prices due to Israel's and the Trump regime's war on Iran. Speaking of Israel, before I move on, the pro-Israel super PAC, known, of course, as AIPAC, released a statement right after Dr. Abdul's victory, and it said that it is going to spend money for MAGA Republican Florida Mike Rogers in the general election so that it can stop Dr. Abdul's supposed anti-Israel campaign. And you see, this is exactly what I was talking about all these times when it came to Haley Stevens being mum about all the AIPAC money backing her campaign. I mean, how could she and many other Democrats simply accept the fact that she was taking money from an organization that will quickly turn around and spend money on a Republican because it knows that Republican will vote to send your tax dollars over to pay for Israel's weapons of war while refusing to spend money right here for Michigan families? The same Republicans, same MAGA Republicans who celebrated Dear Leader Trump and Elon Musk cutting essential services, cutting Medicaid just over a year ago. That's AIPAC's aim. It is to elect Republicans. Twas always thus. Twas always thus will be. Time now for the Left of Lansing weekly poll. Which Michigan race scares you the most as a Democrat in Michigan? The governor's race between Democrat Jocelyn Benson and MAGA Republican John James, or the Senate race between Democrat Abdul Al-Sayed, MAGA Republican Florida Mike Rogers? Vote on Left of Lansing's YouTube page or Twitter page or on patreon.com/leftoflansing. And thanks for progressive activist Jen for suggesting that question on social media. I kind of stole it from her. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. So I ran across a social media post by political philosopher and sage Meghan McCain, in which Meghan McCain said maybe Democrats should take a hard look at why actual working class people and black voters are repulsed by the socialists running and continue to wholeheartedly reject them. First of all, Meghan, and I know you probably didn't catch this inherent bias in your post, but you see, black voters, yeah, they're also considered working class voters. Just thought I'd, you know, let you in on that little secret. There aren't working class voters and then black voters. But you see, Meghan McCain, she didn't catch that because, you see, in her mind, white people work, black people are just black. Secondly, it's interesting how Meghan McCain, a Republican, mind you, claims that working class people and black people are repulsed by the socialists who are running and they are rejecting them. And, you know, it's interesting. It's really interesting she says that because Democratic socialists have scored victories in New York City, Colorado, and now in Michigan. They scored a major victory in the Senate race and they scored other victories in Detroit and Ann Arbor. And I could be wrong, but I believe people of color, you know, might live in those areas, Meghan. And then as we've discussed here, William Lawrence winning Alyssa Slotkin's old congressional seat in which there are white working class voters, black working class voters, brown working class voters, Asian American working class voters. It seems to me, Meghan, that those voters collectively backed a strong progressive like William Lawrence. They didn't really reject him. We've also covered how Democratic Socialist and State Representative Donovan McKinney defeated incumbent cryptocurrency creep Congressman Sri Tandahar, giving the city of Detroit black representation in D.C. for the first time in years. But even more, it serves as an example of black voters backing a Democratic Socialist. Not to mention how Detroit City Council also has a couple of DSA members on it. I'm not sure Meghan really knew that. Or not to mention how Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib is a Democratic Socialist in Detroit. Not to mention how in the 8th State House District, comprising of Detroit and Ferndale, 26-year-old Democratic Socialist Chris Gilmer Hill, yeah, he upset incumbent State Representative Hillary Scott by 6 points. Scott was the only incumbent to lose a primary race, by the way. So Democratic Socialism and progressivism, yeah, it's winning over lots of hearts and minds within the working class, which also includes, Meghan, black voters. You know this, Detroit is the epitome of a working class town. It's kind of known for its grit, which just isn't a Detroit Lions saying. No. Okay, fine. Are older black voters maybe a bit leery of the term Democratic Socialism or progressivism? Yeah, perhaps. In Michigan Senate race, Haley Stevens carried more black voters and even won in places where these Democratic Socialists or progressives won races, like in Donovan McKinney's 13th House District. And I remember back in the spring when I was doing some yard work and I was listening to the Still Social's Point of Disorder podcast, and they were talking about the Senate primary, and one of the hosts, Norris, who keeps his ear to the ground in the D, reminded the other host how Haley Stevens, for whatever fault she has, is visible in her district and remains visible within the black community. And I remember saying, really? And then moments later, I remember I said, yeah, Norris is probably right. Older black voters tend to go with the more safe pick, the one that they believe has the best chance to win. And I remember in 08, when Obama faced Hillary Clinton, Hillary had a good amount of black voter support because she and her husband had, you know, a history of doing well in garnering support from black voters. But when Obama started to win some primaries, well, then that's when things began to switch. And I suspect that that will happen for Dr. Abdul's case, which is why, though, he's got to visit Flint, Genesee County, and Saginaw County. I am imploring him to do that. Because unlike what some in the Democratic Party establishment or MAGA believes, or someone like Meghan McCain believes, black voters are not a monolith. As we just saw in Michigan, while a good chunk of black voters didn't back Abdul al-Sayed, many in the same districts who backed Stevens ended up voting for progressive or Democratic Socialist candidates. And younger people, white and black, backed Abdul even more. Again, that Abdul al-Sayed won despite being massively outspent is showing working class voters that you don't have to worry about the specter of electability. You see, winning a primary and beating the party establishment combined with massive corporate and AIPAC money going after you pretty much proves that you're electable. And it shows that, yes, democratic socialism or working class progressivism is electable.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. Tuning in, it's a podcast. Thanks so much for checking in this week. Coming up next week, Livingston County progressive and union fighter Casey Helton will join us to break down the primary and what to expect here in the general election. And you know what? I think I will ask Casey the poll question for this week. Which race worries her the most, the governor's race or the Senate's race? So that's coming up all next week. I can tell you that yes, I am breathing a sigh of relief now. But now that means it's time to defeat Florida Mike Rogers and every fascist MAGA Michigan Republican so that way we can retake the state trifecta. Oh, and of course, sending William Lawrence to Congress while sending Tom Barrett home, as well as sending MAGA Republican Congressman Bill Huizenga home would be quite excellent too. Can you imagine a Congress with Donovan McKinney and William Lawrence helping represent Michigan? Oh, that would be so beautiful. We are less than 90 days from the midterm. So now's the time to fight for the working class, to fight for democracy, to fight against MAGA fascism, and most of all, to take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.